Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Anybody, when you build a new chain, can go and borrow security from the Cosmos Hub. This is not new, even inside Ethereum. Ethereum is a common framework, and then now anybody can come and build a new dApp on top of Ethereum. Imagine you build like a new stable coin on top of Ethereum worth hundreds of billions of dollars. Then are you over-leveraging Ethereum's stake?
This episode of The Protocol is sponsored by the Stellar Community Fund.
Dive deep into the blockchain realm with The Protocol podcast, with CoinDesk founding editor of The Protocol newsletter, Brad Cowan, and tech journalists, Sam Kessler and Margot Nykerk. They unravel the intricate technologies powering cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum, one block at a time. Just a reminder, CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice.
Hello and welcome to the Protocol Podcast. I'm Brad Cowan here with my co-hosts Margot Nykerk and Sam Kessler. We're excited to dive into today's show with the latest news and developments in technology behind crypto and blockchains. First, please do not forget to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, The Protocol, on Coindesk.com. And let's dive right into it. We've got a pretty hot guest in the crypto world, Sriram Kannan, the founder of EigenLayer. We were just looking earlier, their TVL, now $12 billion. I think you're second after Lido now, and not even on mainnet, which is one of the things we want to talk to you about. And Sriram, you know, we've done a lot of research and you know, obviously there's been a ton of reporting, and you've been on a ton of podcasts about EigenLayer. If you could just give sort of the elevator pitch for people who might not know a lot about EigenLayer, but want to know in probably the simplest terms, but also the briefest of terms.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the way to think about EigenLayer is you want a solution is considered a blockchain or a crypto solution if it incorporates decentralized trust. And decentralized trust emerges from what? There's a distributed group of nodes, and then they take a stake, you know, which is some asset of value like ETH, lock it in a contract and make a promise that they will run this decentralized network correctly. This is the core of decentralized trust in any blockchain like Ethereum. Now, what we do, what EigenLayer does, is to enable you to offer decentralized trust, create a general purpose marketplace for decentralized trust. So anybody who wants to build a new protocol incorporating decentralized trust, let's say I want to build an Oracle or a bridge or an AI protocol or a database or a multi-party computation protocol, anything. Now, what I do is instead of trying to go and start a new decentralized trust network for each one of these protocols, there is a common decentralized trust network on EigenLayer, which is a group of operators who are staked in Ethereum and a common economic stake. You know, Brad mentioned $12 billion. So this basically forms the root of trust. So now when I build a new service, I can just directly go in and, you know, consume the trust from these nodes. So I don't have to build my, every new idea doesn't need a new decentralized trust network. So that's the vision of EigenLayer. Another way of putting it is if you were building a web application, this is by analogy, if you're building a web application in 1995, what you would do is you would have to build your own server. You would have to build your own payments platform. You would have to build your own identity login platform. You have to build your own database. And then you're building whatever application you're building. Let's say you're building an Amazon bookstore. You have to build all these other things to just build the bookstore that you want. In 2024, that's absolutely not the case. You would go to Amazon Web Services as a cloud provider. You would use a payment service like Stripe. You would use a identity service like OAuth. You would use a database service like MongoDB. And maybe even you have a wrapper for creating your e-commerce website like Shopify. And then you just build and deploy your thing on top. Really, really easy. Now, you know, millions of people build and deploy e-commerce websites. This took like 20, 30 years of work in the web application space. What we want to do is bring the same amount of, you know, ease of use and innovation into the crypto space by providing a common framework of decentralized trust. Now, anybody can create and build new infrastructure services. And then if you're a consumer application, you just consume these infrastructure services. You say, oh, I'm using this bridge, this AI service, that execution environment, this data availability system. And then now you bundle all of these together and then create an end user application. So this is the vision that we're building towards.
So concretely, the way that Eigenlayer works, and we've talked about this a lot on our podcast, and you've talked about it a lot more on a lot of other podcasts, is people can restake Ether, essentially, that they've staked on the Ethereum blockchain to secure it, to secure other systems called actively validated systems, AVSs. And one of the critiques that you've gotten for over a year now, since you first introduced this whole concept, is, you know, that this looks a lot like rehypothecation, stuff that we've seen in traditional finance. I know you've talked about this, but can you kind of lay out for our listeners, you know, your viewpoint on that critique?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's not new even inside crypto. This is called shared security. Like Cosmos has this thing called Cosmos Hub, where, you know, anybody, when you build a new chain, can go and borrow security from the Cosmos Hub. This is not new, even inside Ethereum. Ethereum is a common framework, and then now anybody can come and build a new dApp on top of Ethereum. Imagine you build like a new stable coin on top of Ethereum worth hundreds of billions of dollars. Then are you over-leveraging Ethereum stake? Okay, so there is a foundational thing that very few people actually seem to understand, which is how staking and security works. And so the first thing about staking and versus all kinds of other things is endogenous risk. Endogenous means you control the risk. And the way you control the risk versus rehypothecation or anything else that, you know, in traditional markets, you are not taking a price. So imagine you go and put your money into a lending market and you're taking a 100x margin position. Now, if the market price moves by 1%, you will lose your capital and you have no control on the market price. So you're taking a completely exogenous outside your control risk. With Eigenlayer, when you stake and you opt into promise to validate 100 services, you're taking an endogenous risk, which means you know that if you are not malicious, you are not going to lose your ETH. It's in your control to run your operator and stake correctly. So this is a foundational difference. I think a simple example to like tether this is, imagine there is a big mall and there is a center store in the mall. And the mall says, you know, when you come into the mall, you have to put up $1,000 deposit so that, you know, you don't steal something from the mall. And, you know, the main store has this deposit system. And then the other stores are saying, oh, but, you know, they could come and steal from my stores. And then now like they all form a coalition and say that when you're putting $1,000 deposit, you promise not only to steal from the main store, but also from all the side stores. And not stealing is in your control. It is not an exogenous thing. It's not something that somebody else needs to do. That's on the staker side. So the staker, if they know what they're opting into and make sure that they're running it correctly, they're taking no additional risk. On the services side, there is a potential to over leverage. And imagine there is $1 billion staked, and then there are 100 applications. Now, each of them, if they think, oh, I have $1 billion stake, I have $1 billion stake, and they all account for their own economics like that, then, you know, it is chaos because now each of them think they have $1 billion stake, but there's actually only in total $1 billion stake. But this is just a matter of accounting sharply. And Eigenlayer has the sharpest system of crypto economic accounting. We have what we call attributable security. There is something called pool security, which is instead of, you know, To take simple numbers, instead of each of the protocol having $1 billion separately staked, if there was $100 billion common stake staked across 100 protocols, it's better for all the protocols. Why to attack any one protocol? Now you need 100 billion rather than needing 1 billion. So this is a big kind of benefit. This is called pool security. In addition to pool security, EigenLayer also offers attributable security. Attributable security means an AVS, a service that's built on EigenLayer, can come in and say, out of this $100 billion that is totally kind of staked, I want a particular attribution of $3 billion because I know I'm base, I have a lot of transactions, whatever. So I'm going to say, I need $3 billion. Now it's EigenLayer as a protocol's job to make sure that even if all the AVSs simultaneously trigger, I will be able to redistribute, you know, the amount $3 billion to this base AVS. So this is a kind of like a complex accounting kept in the EigenLayer platform.
So we just went over a lot there. You hit a lot of the questions we were going to ask. But the big thing that you mentioned, you give this example of, we'd rather have $100 million securing 100 protocols rather than, you know, 100 protocols each individually secured by $1 million. That's the whole point of EigenLayer. Now, there's two sides of that. There's the benefit of it would now cost the entire pooled amount to attack any one of those protocols. But then there's it gets to the, you know, the leverage things where there's also leverage risk in a sense where if one of those protocols is attacked, there's the contagion risk that's kind of wiped across all of the protocols that are in that pool. You mentioned attributable security, which is the idea that you can kind of add an insurance fund to each of these AVSs so that they're each, you know, attached to a part of the pool. But that's kind of where I'm actually confused. Like, how do you make sure that if one protocol leads to a mass slashing event, drains the entire EigenLayer pool, leaving, you know, nothing behind other than this insurance fund, how do you make sure that the insurance fund is solvent to still support protocols?
Yeah. So what happens is, you know, there's a lot of details on this, but I'll give a high level picture. So when there's $100 billion stakes and there are these 100 AVSs, any one AVS can only slash and redistribute their attributable security. So if there's an AVS which has only 0.5 billion attributable security, they can only slash and redistribute 0.5 billion. If no other AVS ever triggers slashing, and you know that $100 billion worth of stakers have done bad stuff after the period where other people haven't triggered the slashing, you can actually burn the remaining funds. But you're not going to allow that AVS to take the remaining funds and then go and redistribute it. So the high-level idea is the benefit of pooling is coming from to attack any one service. I still need a huge amount of capital to even enter the system, become malicious, and then go and attack it. But if I do attack it, that service can uniquely only slash and redistribute. So you can think of like after you slash, what happens? Something is redistributed and something is burnt, right? And so that's the two things that can happen. Redistributed to the AVS. So the attributable security is the amount redistributed to the AVS. And if nobody else comes in and claims their portion of attributable security by triggering their slashing, then the remaining funds can be burned. So you know when you're like, you're getting simultaneously the benefit of pooling and the benefit of attribution. So this is a really, really powerful idea. And, you know, normally any simple way to do this would either get you one or the other, but not both. And that's really where like we had to take a lot of care and building.
You know, I'm wondering, you're talking about this insurance for these AVSs, but how have you figured out the details on this? Like, what are the specifics behind this?
Yeah, so I think like calling it an insurance, you know, initially I was calling it that, but I think it's not the right way because
Why is it not the right way?
It's not when you're insuring something, right? Let's say you are insuring against like fire. Like what's happening is there's an exogenous agent, the fire, which is causing the damage. And you don't know, you're not going to go and extract from the fire the damages and then pay back. Whereas EigenLayer is a system, completely closed system. And this is why I think when people talk about insurance, there's this other idea of slashing insurance, which is some other person is coming in and underwriting risks, right? That's not what's happening. What's happening is there's a common pool of stake already. Like a staker is coming in. The contract that they have with EigenLayer is I'm putting in my money and I know if I'm honest, I will not be slashed, right? Like this is the deal that a staker has with EigenLayer. And if I'm malicious, then all my money may be gone. That is the contract you have with EigenLayer on the one side. On the other side, an AVS comes in and says that, hey, you know, I want to use the pool security, but I also want to make sure that if my AVS goes down, I should be able to redistribute X amount of money to my harmed parties. Okay. No, what's happening is out of this $100 billion pool that is sitting inside EigenLayer, now what it would do is it would say, oh, this whenever slashing happens, this 3 billion portion is reserved for this AVS to come and trigger, you know, at redistribution for. So the redistribution happening is a closed system. You're snatching from the bad guy and giving to the harmed party, which is very different from exogenous party coming and I'm coming in and I'm underwriting risk of some third parties. Like this is what a normal insurance market is. And an insurance market is usually statistical, which means if all cars in the United States crash today, Geico doesn't have money to cover it. But that's not how EigenLayer works. EigenLayer is combinatorial and unconditionally correct security, which means all the AVSs trigger slashing simultaneously. EigenLayer has a proof of solvency, which makes sure that you can redistribute to each one of these simultaneously. So there is no leverage, no overcounting, no statistical like risk multiplexing. There is no extrinsic party. It's a closed system of karma.
If I can just chime in, that makes a lot of sense. You definitely, it sounds like, need that to respond to all of these like contagion things that we've been talking about. But I think the question is like, concretely, how do you calculate how much, you don't want to call it insurance, attributable security should go to a given AVS? How much are they going to pay?
This is a market where you can come in and buy. Like, let's think of, like, there are various stages this market will evolve. Let's think of the simplest possible market. There is a fixed APR and, you know, you would come and say, oh, to acquire this insurance, I have to pay a seven, you know, this much.
Is that how you're doing it? Like, do you have that figured out yet?
There's a mechanism we have not published publicly, so we'll have that in the coming months.
And so I guess the question then becomes just timeline-wise, where are you guys at? I know you're kind of, you've got the economic security, which is the pooled security stuff we're talking about. Then there's decentralized trust, which we've talked about. Where are we on the EigenLayer roadmap? And when are we going to see more details around attributable security, the slashing, all of this stuff? I think a lot of people are wondering.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Right now, we have a public testnet running. In this public testnet, you can do the following things. You can stake, you can opt into an AVS. On the AVS side, you can build and deploy an AVS. There's stakers, there's operators, there's AVS. All these three sides can build and deploy services. On the EigenDA, which is the first AVS that we are building, it's a data availability service that is also running on the system. What is not live in the system is slashing. So everything else is included. So there's no slashability in the first version, which is sitting on testnet, which is for many reasons, for abundance of safety, right? Like you don't want to have a slashing event, you want to turn it on slowly. It is a complex system with attributions, you know, so we will have a phased roadmap where the next phase will have slashing. So all of that. So that's on testnet and that's what's going on mainnet in the coming month. We published a post called The Road to Mainnet. There is a phased roadmap there where we're going to bring in operators and then we're going to bring in EigenDA and then we're going to bring in AVSs, all of these things coming up on the mainnet. But the exclusion still is slashing. So there's no slashing on this mainnet.
Let's just take
you can come in, you can stake, you can offer services, and then the services, the AVS can use these services to do other things. But the core slashability is not turned on. Mm-hmm. So that's right.
Sriram, I need to just take a quick break here, and we'll be right back with Sriram Kannan.
Have a blockchain project idea and need funding to make it happen? Look no further. The Stellar Community Fund is here to help bring your project to life on the Stellar Network. This year alone, over $10 million in XLM awards have been allocated across more than 100 innovative projects. And your idea could be next. Approved project submissions can receive up to $100,000 in XLM per project. So head over to communityfund.stellar.org to get started.
Calling all developers. Score a Consensus 2024 Developer Pass for just $109, but act fast. Only a limited number of these passes are available. You may have heard that Consensus ain't for devs, but here's why you're wrong. Consensus is the only place you can fully immerse yourself in a multi-chain environment and learn directly from 20-plus chains, including Arbitrum, Chainlink, Solana, and more. Enjoy 3 days of intensive learning with technical talks, 40-plus expert speakers, and 20-plus in-depth workshops, including dedicated half days for Ethereum and Bitcoin, and 3 full days of programming on our Protocol Village stage. Consensus 2024 is happening May 29th through 31st in Austin, Texas. Don't miss your chance to network at curated developer meetups, find new career opportunities, and explore hundreds of side events and hacker houses around town. Grab your $109 developer pass today, but remember, this exclusive offer is limited. Visit consensus.coindesk.com now to secure your developer pass before they're gone. Explore the epicenter of blockchain innovation at Consensus 2024. And we're back with Sriram Kannan. So Sriram, you know, I believe you've put out there that you're targeting mainnet for early Q2. Is that still on track?
That is on track.
How do you define early Q2?
it's in a month from now, like, you know, be April, maybe latest May, everything will be live on mainnet. The set of services we are talking about, I think, as I was just mentioning, you have stakers, you know, can delegate to operators. Operators can opt into AVSs. AVSs, other people can build, and we have like 10 AVSs live on our testnet, and many of them will be going to mainnet. Our own AVS, EigenDA, will be on mainnet. So a lot of the ecosystems kind of coming together. The exclusion, like I mentioned, is slashing.
I have a question, Sriram, you know, related to this market. Is that also up and running on testnet?
Yeah. So the market means basically as a staker, I can choose which AVSs to opt into. Yes, you can.
But there's somehow, you know, that, and that's a market mechanism that causes that rate to go up and down, up or down?
Yeah. So again, there is some details here. Each AVS basically can announce how much they are paying. And then like you look at it and then you look at the risks that you are taking. And then you say, okay, you know, this makes sense for me or it doesn't make sense for me. And then you opt in or don't opt in.
But so
that's
they
the
just,
core of the mechanism.
They just fix their rates and then you decide yay or nay, or there's like a, or
whether
there's
it
a live...
makes sense to you or not.
Got it. And
yeah.
And people, will people be adjusting their rates or?
These are emergent things we have to actually see when things go on in the mainnet, right? So the,
Does it sound,
I'm sure
it sounds
people,
a little
so
bit like
startups.
Does it sound a little bit like the kind of like the corporate bond market in terms of like pricing, you know, credit risk?
Maybe these analogies all have some dimensions in which they're really good and some dimensions where they are not very good. But essentially, like what you're doing as an operator and a staker is you're looking at all the AVSs and seeing what am I getting for opting into this AVS? I'm getting some bunch of payments. What am I putting at risk? Okay, what am I contributing? I'm actually contributing some amount of compute power in the normal mode, right? So that's something that you're giving to the network. The second one is you're taking some amount of illiquidity on your token. So if you want to go sell your ETH or whatever, like you're not going to be able to do it instantly because you're committing it for some amount of time. And then the third one is you're taking a risk of flashing. So because that AVS may trigger slashing for you. And if the system works correctly, if you've audited the smart contracts correctly, you should never be slashed for if you are not malicious. But, you know, you're trusting the contracts to actually work correctly. Like when you're putting your ETH into Aave or something else, you're trusting that the smart contract works.
I think that's super interesting, Sriram. Is just maybe we'll move to the next question, but how this is so also completely brand new, right? Like people are going to have to figure out how to trade all this stuff and price all that stuff. And, you know, and a lot of it might be end up being mispriced, right?
I mean, absolutely possible. So, you know, the initial price discovery is going to take some time, right? It is not at all obvious that on day one, you'll have the right pricing on the system. It may be overpriced. It may be underpriced. People may say, oh, I need a 20% APR, or they may say like, actually, I'm already staked and I only need like a 0.1% APR. So there's a huge amount of variance here and we don't know what is going to actually emerge. So that's why we are taking an adaptive approach here, which is launch it, see what people do, learn from it, and then update the market structure. So we're not committing to a very rigid market structure to begin with.
I want to circle back real quick because, you know, you brought up EigenDA as one of the first things that are going to go live, which is your guys' in-house data availability layer. And, you know, we've spoken a lot about DA in the past. Celestia had its mainnet launch a few months ago, and Avail is also coming out with their own one. But I'm wondering specifically because, you know, we are talking about EigenLayer and about restaking and about your technology. Will EigenDA use pooled security?
Yeah, EigenDA will use pooled security. So the way we think about how EigenDA works versus all the other systems is they are asking the question. So other blockchains like, you know, Celestia, for example, ask the question, what is a minimal layer one? What is a minimal layer? What is the minimal set of functionalities for layer one that maximizes other people to come and build new things on top? And, you know, just have a core data availability system and a consensus protocol and a new network, and then now other people can build other things on top. So that's the, and so it's an answer to the question, what is the minimum minimalistic blockchain? The question that we asked is very different. The question that we asked is, how do we scale Ethereum? Right? It's a narrower question in the sense, and also it is rooted in Ethereum. So the question is, oh, you know, you have Ethereum. Ethereum already has a consensus protocol. It has validators. It has, all this other infrastructure, but it doesn't have a high bandwidth of data availability. Like how much data you can write to Ethereum is pretty small. It's, you know, 30 kilobytes per second with the recent upgrade 4844 that went live like 1 or 2 weeks back. You know, the crazy thing is even 30 kilobytes per second is not getting filled right now. This is because a lot of rollups were hyper-optimized for even more congestion. But now we have 30 kilobytes per second. What EigenDA is doing is launching at 10 megabytes per second. The architecture, everything of EigenDA is centered around this question, how do we augment Ethereum to scale? And so that means, how do I reuse the Ethereum stake? How do I reuse, and that answers your question about like pool security, right? How do I reuse the Ethereum validator set? How do I reuse the Ethereum's consensus? We don't have, EigenDA doesn't have a consensus protocol. Ethereum already has a consensus protocol. So why should I build another consensus protocol? It's just missing in data bandwidth. So we just have a system of, you know, nodes where each node only downloads a small portion of the data, but together they download and guarantee the availability of all the portions of the data. So it is an internally sharded system, EigenDA.
Sorry we keep on moving things along, but we're coming to time. Just to clarify one thing, you're going to use pooled security, but slashing doesn't exist yet. The attributable security hasn't been defined yet. EigenDA is going to launch. So concretely, you've talked about decentralized trust. In the next couple of months, when EigenDA launches, what is that model? Is it just going to be a bunch of validators? Are they going to be economically incentivized, to be honest? Or is it going to be this kind of training wheels like we've seen in rollups? Like it's a totally normal thing. But I think people are confused about that.
Yeah, there is definitely like a training wheels phase for EigenDA where, you know, even though the full slashing is not live, we are going to run this system in, you know, whatever beta and make sure that people are able to use it, you know, maybe have redundant, you know, backups and other stuff, right? Just like right now you have single centralized sequencers, you know, you can use the system with this model without, you know, slashability of ETH. But as the slashability of ETH comes in, EigenDA also becomes, you know, economically secure. So that's a roadmap for EigenDA.
Gotcha. So, and do we know when we're going to make it? We still don't know exactly when we're going to get the pooled security for EigenDA, though. That's on the roadmap, but it's not there quite yet. Right?
You mean like slashability, right?
Slashability and the pool. I do mean pooled security, right? Because you're going to have this, you're going to have a bunch of nodes securing it. But there's not going to be that economic component quite yet.
Yeah. I think this is also going to launch in phases. Like, you know, there is the day of launch, and then there is, you know, we turn on like incentivization, and then we turn on like pool security, and then we turn on attributable security. So we're going to see all these phases. And at any phase, we should be very clear what is actually running in production. So we'll absolutely.
And then like the another thing I wanted to ask about as we're closing up is just to kind of go back to the beginning of EigenLayer. You've decided to kind of base things on Ethereum ultimately and on the Ether token because it makes complete sense. It's got a lot of value relative to what all these other ecosystems would be able to prop up on their own if they're trying to create proof of stake economic trust systems. But I know like at the very beginning, you guys considered a bunch of ecosystems. And I actually saw a deck too. Your initial idea was like Cardano. So can you kind of explain what your kind of history is? What's your path from Cardano to Ethereum?
Yeah. So initially we had this idea that now I can use stake to run like other networks. And our initial idea was I can do virtualization. Virtualization means I can run a different execution engine on a different chain. So this was in 2021. And when we looked at various chains, so initially we were thinking EigenLayer will be a multi-ecosystem like project. Like, oh, you can go and build it on every ecosystem. And we looked around and asked, like, where is virtualization going to be most useful? And virtualization is most useful when you cannot do something on the layer one by itself, but actually there's a lot of economic value. And particularly we were thinking about EVM virtualization. I want to run EVM on any chain. And okay, so if you want to run EVM on any chain, which chain is most interesting? And we said, we narrowed down to a few, like maybe it's Solana, maybe it's Near, maybe it's Cardano. And so we were going to build EVM virtualization on all of these. And we initially actually had a version working on Cardano because it was the hardest smart contract system to build on. Like, you know, the harder it is to build on the base one, the more people are going to build on the virtualized one. So that's how we got started.
And then it didn't have smart contracts at that point, right? That tends to make it pretty difficult.
Yes. But you know, that was not the reason we didn't continue to build on it. I think we realized that the scope of what EigenLayer is much bigger than virtualization. You can build pretty much any technical feature on top of a common framework. And so what that meant is we fix the staking source, and then now you can add the features from every ecosystem into a common place so that they can interoperate. You know, it is in the same place. We don't have to go and acquire stake from 30 chains. Like there's a single chain, single source. And now we bring all the technologies into one place so they interoperate. They become kind of this like new cloud-like structure. So that was an evolution path. And I think, you know, I was at ETH Denver and I really resonated. This is 2022. And that's the first time I interacted with the Ethereum community per se. I've interacted with Ethereum researchers for a long time. And I found a resonance with the values and that there is the core set of values of censorship resistance, permissionless innovation, credible neutrality. All of these resonate with us deeply.
Hey, Sriram, we're going to wrap it there. Thank you so much. I mean, just I heard you talking about the comparison with Bitcoin merge mining and how you sort of pivoted off of that towards proof of stake, which was super interesting. That's it for this week's episode. Sriram, thank you so much for coming on and answering all of our questions. And that is a wrap. Thank you for listening to the Protocol Podcasts. If you have any questions about any stories or comments, please reach out to us at podcasts@coindesk.com. Subject line, The Protocol. You can listen to us weekly on Coindesk Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, please subscribe to our weekly newsletter, The Protocol, on coindesk.com. Thank you to our producer, Michelle Musso, and Mel Montañez, our booker. See you next week.